Dear listeners, welcome to Faces of Digital Health, a podcast about digital health and how healthcare systems around the world adopt technology, with me, Tiasza Zajc. After an intense race in AI development, lighted by the release of ChatGPT at the end of 2022, two important things happened in the last week of March 2023. First, over 1,000 workers, such as Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla, Twitter and SpaceX, Steve Wozniak, co-founder of Apple, Joshua Bengio, founder and scientific director at Mila, Turing Prize winner and professor at University of Montreal, Stuart Russell, Berkeley professor of computer science and the director of the Center for Intelligent Systems, signed a public letter that urges a pause on AI development before humanity as a society decides how humans can control the development of AI. As written in the letter, quote, powerful AI systems should be developed only once we are confident that their effects will be positive and their risks will be manageable, end of quote. A day after this letter was published, UNESCO published a press release that calls on all governments to immediately implement the Global Ethical Framework, which has anonymously been adopted by 193 member states of UNESCO. As warned by UNESCO, we need to address many concerning ethical issues raised by AI innovations, in particular discrimination and stereotyping, including the issue of gender inequality, but also the fight against disinformation, the right to privacy, the protection of personal data, and human and environmental rights. And the industry cannot self-regulate, states the press release. Healthcare is moving from the era of gathering data through digitized systems, EHRs, sensors, and wearables, to the era of mining that data for better patient outcomes and operational efficiency. However, in order for AI and algorithms to help improve the health of many, we should strive for algorithms to be open and transparent, says Bart De Witte, founder of Hippo AI Foundation, a renowned expert on digital transformation in healthcare in Europe, who regularly speaks and posts about technology and innovation strategy, with a particular focus on the socioeconomic impact on healthcare. In this short discussion, recorded at the Vision Health Pioneers Demo Day on March 28th in Berlin, Bart explains, why is open and transparent AI important for the greater good in healthcare? Where is global medical development going with different values and regulations of different cultures? And he comments the upcoming European Health Data Space Regulation. Enjoy the show, and if you like what you will hear, subscribe to the podcast to be notified about new episodes automatically. Also, go to fodh.substack.com to read our newsletter, which is published roughly on a monthly basis. Now let's dive in today's discussion. Bart, we are
here again,
2.5 hours away from the Vision Health Pioneers Demo Day, where you're going to have a keynote. What are some of the discussions about open AI that we are not having but should be having?
Well, we should all consider if we are dependent now at the moment from one single institute or closed system that is influencing 100 million of brains at the moment, and we don't have any insight on that model, on the training data, on anything that has been used, we should really consider, if we really want to go back into the Middle Ages, where knowledge, open access to knowledge was not given, and where there was one single institution that defined what moral was. There was an institution in Rome. They had a secret library called the Apostle Library in the Vatican, and we were buying letter of indulgences. That's the Middle Age. And are we going back into that so we can decide if we want to still enlighten us and get open access to knowledge, or if we want to really subordinate us to a single AI that defines what is the truth?
Where do you see the most resistance against open AI in medicine?
In medicine, medicine is a bit like Game of Thrones, so nobody wants to really open. It's all about kingdoms that want to keep on having their authority. So I think the biggest resistance is culture and mindset. And I think people don't really understand what openness really means and what the advantages are. I think one of the triggers is, well, the incentives in research. Like, a researcher wants to be the first one publishing that paper, so he will not collaborate with other institutes to build a larger AI model, because then he needs to share his paper with other authors. I think we need to work on incentives, and we need to see how we can, in a smart way, use all these resources, because we have amazing, like, OpenAI has less than 1,000 employees. How many researchers do we have in Europe in public research institutes working on AI? Probably a few 20,000, and we cannot compete because we are not aligned. And I think not the alignment problem from AI, where that's another topic, but like, I think we need to align in a shared vision what we really want to achieve in Europe.
When ChatGPT was released to the public domain, many saw this as a revolution of really democratizing the use of AI. You know, all you had to do, all you still have to do, is go to the chat AI page and basically discuss things with the model, which learns it in addition to that. And many see this as democratizing AI, but I don't think you share that opinion, right? Why
no.
is that?
Well, a democracy is not somebody decide if you get access or not. Like, that's feudal. Like, if you own territory and you then have a gate and you say, like, you can come in and you cannot come in, and you define the rules, then that is just feudalism. That is not democracy. The democracy was created by the Lincoln address, like modern democracy, when he said, like, a government has to be of the people, by the people, and for the people. And what OpenAI does now is for the people, but not of the people and by the people. And true democratized technology means that we have common ownership, not public ownership controlled by a government, because that's also dangerous. That's what China is doing. I think we need to work on things that are commonly owned, and that's what we call AI commons or data commons.
Mm-hmm. It's still sometimes difficult to really understand how the world where algorithms are open would look like. So given that you are also an advisor to digital health startups and companies across the world, how would you argue what kind of business model can they have if they don't protect their IP and basically what they are developing internally? Because it takes a lot of resources to develop algorithms, to pay people, to be competitive on the market.
So what if you share these resources that you say, like, it takes a lot of resources? What if you share that cost with 10 others and you start jointly building things together? You will have 10% of your R&D cost. Like, it doesn't make sense that each single startup is, like, buying data, training their own AI models, and then over time, at the beginning that really works, but over time they just want to scale their product. They want to create a great customer experience. And there was this really dichotomy on the market that people think that the price of a product is equaling the closed AI and the value of that closed asset. No, that is of interest of the investor. The investor wants to create assets like financial security. So what we're doing here is that the financial market is capturing data and capturing AI models that we protect not with IP but with trade secrets, and then the investor can exit that startup. And that's when you have an exit mindset, that you want to capture as much value as possible and make things as close as possible. So if you have an investor that thinks that way and you want to get him on board, think twice what your official goal is. If you're going for a three-year run and you want to do an exit and quickly get some bucks, that is fine. Like, but if you really want to create truly great products, then a great product is not like a physician will even, I think, trust more an AI service that he uses that is open and is peer-reviewable than something that is closed. And I think if you have more trust in that solution, your solution will scale faster, you will get more clients, and you will get more trust in that market. So, and then you will become perhaps a market leader. I don't think all these things that we are developing today are really built for scaling a certain business. It is more with the investor mindset to capture as much value and to be able to sell that value quite quickly.
Different cultures and different countries have a different regulation when it comes to data privacy, data sharing, what needs to be taken into account so you can use the data to either train your models or develop new solutions. So from that perspective, and especially given that you lecture across the world, also in China, are we going in the direction where basically there's going to be a discrepancy between access to novelties in the medical findings, in the scientific findings, because of these different rules?
Well, that's, people think, I had yesterday a discussion, strangely, with somebody from the Ministry of Health in Germany who thought IP on data was something really good. I said, like, what is the role of the ministry, I asked. Like, it's crazy that he made that statement. But I think there is this misconception that only when you close things that you are able to get investments and innovate. Like 20 or 30 years of software development, like 30 years ago, everybody was closed. Like you could not even learn how to program because you had to go to a company called Unix or IBM to learn how to code. Nothing was publicly available because everything was proprietary. And as everything got democratized, people could learn how to code. Like they can do it like at home. Like they can read it. They can go into libraries, like as an analogy to the books that we were reading. We can go to code libraries and read code and then replicate that code. And that created the whole ecosystem. And people forget that we have a demo day today, that all these startups here would not exist if software was not democratized. Like without the democratization of these tools, you can't build. And it's like similar. I have a bit of the feeling that people think today, if Gutenberg would have invented his printing machine today, his investor would probably advise him to patent every single letter of the printed letter of the alphabet. So and probably thinking that's a good business model because you're going to patent each single letter. That would have meant that everybody who wrote a book needs to license every single letter for writing that book. We probably would have seen only 1,000 books. Luther would never probably has written his Bible, and we probably were still buying letter of indulgences. Like we haven't learned anything from history, what openness did and the Enlightenment did. And I think in healthcare, there was a lot of proof during COVID. All the barriers were broken down. The fact that we got so quickly the vaccine was based on open data sharing from the Chinese government on a platform called virology.org. There were so many open source platforms and collaboration, and we saw the speed. Now we're pulling back. We're fencing the walls, and things are slower again. And I think we could see a glimpse. I think it's an important moment in history that we had suddenly a joint enemy that was taking our freedoms, and because of that joint enemy, we start to collaborate. And I think that's the best way I would support trigger open source collaboration is, what is your enemy? Like, what is your joint enemy that you have to collaborate to start joining forces to build something equally performant as the closed AI or any sort of solution?
One last question. So Europe has a very fragmented healthcare ecosystem because of different regulations, different languages. Different countries have different structure of their healthcare systems. But at the same time, we are building the European health data space, which is aiming to do a few things that go into the open approach. So kind of anonymizing data and enabling researchers to get a broader pool of available data for research. So what are some of the things you believe that we as individual patients or consumers could be should be mindful about when it comes to the European health data space and the whole development that we expect to
Thank
see.
You for bringing it up, because we had already discussions on this topic. And I oppose the idea to even set any sort of paywall in front of data, because as soon as you even one hospital starts like to tell a guy, we need to pay for these resources and we need to clean the data and the infrastructure, so we're going to ask for a payment fee. It's kind of similar as when we did that with public access of shifting public access to research papers to the domain into Elsevier and Springer. Now people need to pay €60 for getting access to a research paper that is paid by tax dollars or euros in this case, and we can't access it. So we start doing now the same with data. We today have a paywall that is perhaps limited, but that is already problematic, putting a paywall. Why? Because you allow like larger organizations that have more access to capital to access more data points. Because as soon as you equal data to capital, you will allow that larger capital-rich organizations are able to access more data pools because they have just a resource. And I think that is just going to accelerate the monopolization of these things. The second thing what I criticize, there is one passage in the proposal written of the European data space where there is written that data can still be protected by IP, which is a legal bullshit, sorry for my words, because you cannot protect data with IP. You can protect databases with IP, but not data, but it's written in that way. So, and there was a kind of written that certain data sets need to be protected. And that means that within that common data space, there will be private organizations that always will keep their data, will not share, and the public infrastructures are sharing the data. That is just going to create new asymmetries because it's a pool from the public sphere into a private sphere. And I think that is trying to do something good, but then trying to make a compromise, and compromises in this case are going to not lead to good results. And then the third thing is that in Germany, they're going to start pushing for the opt-out. And I said, yes, opt-out is perhaps nice. But this week I used a dermatology app from a German startup, and I needed to answer a question. Do I give consent to use my data for research? And I asked them before I answered the question, can you answer me if my data is going to be used to create closed AI protected by IP or trade secrets, or is it going to be open source? I never got an answer, so I never used the app. And I think we need to start differentiating, because consent for research means now today in the data science AI industry is that you give consent for data science or data scientists, and then people allowing to close that knowledge that you extract out of the data and be able to sell it back to you. And I think that is just a wrong formulation. So I think if we can create an option that we have data trusts where we can give our data, and these data trusts secure that all our data is going to be used for open knowledge, I think that will be a better win. My preference scenario would be that Europe would really enforce open source standards, because then all the others will not be able to enter our market, because we say like, well, we don't close these things, you need to open it. And then the market advantage of Google and others will disappear in healthcare. And perhaps we will have 20,000 of small, medium enterprises spread across Europe, creating local jobs. I think that's a much more promising scenario as thinking that we need a Google in Europe. I think that's absolutely not consistent with what Europe actually is. Although people dream of these things.
You've been listening to Faces of Digital Health, a proud member of the Health Podcast Network. If you enjoyed the show, do leave a rating or a review wherever you get your podcast, subscribe to the show, or follow us on LinkedIn. Additionally, check out our newsletter. You can find it at fodh.substack.com. That's fodh.substack.com. Stay tuned.